The Westwood One Podcast Network.
The toughest climbs have the prettiest views. When you feel like you can't climb anymore to keep climbing because the view once you get to the top is going to be worth all that pain and all that toughness and all those moments of questioning and worrying.
Team Never Quit Radio. All right, everybody, welcome back to the TNQ Podcast. I'm your host, Marcus Luttrell. Every week, it's my job to fire you up, to ignite the legend inside of you, and to push you to your greatness. Join me every week as I take you into my briefing room with some of the most hard-charging people on the planet. They're going to show you how to embrace the suck of life, teach you the values of working your ass off, and charge through whatever life throws at you. This is the Team Never Quit Podcast. So buckle up, Buttercup.
All right, guys, I was thinking the other day when I was listening to the J.J. Watt episode, I know you guys have this like non-violence pact towards each other, but if you guys were to get in an arm wrestling contest, who would win?
Could it be in him?
Yep.
I'm right-handed, he's left-handed, we can't arm wrestle.
No, just doesn't work, huh?
No, nothing whatsoever, even that part, yeah, I can't even do that.
Yeah, he'd win righty, I'd win lefty, I don't know. It's weird.
All right.
I think I prompted this question a couple days ago, and you mentioned this like documentary that people must watch.
Oh, Pulling John.
Pulling John.
Okay, so...
He got me on that too. Go ahead.
Yeah.
John Brzezink. So in all the sports across the country or the world, if you will, the longest reigning world champion is in arm wrestling.
In all sports.
In all sports.
And it's this guy?
It's this guy.
John Brzezink.
John Brzezink. They call him, they call him,
you haven't seen this, you need to watch it. I mean, you don't even have to, it goes into the history of arm wrestling and then there's multiple different guys.
Does he have just one big bicep? Or is he overall?
Yeah, no, that's nothing to do with biceps.
I mean, biceps.
Man.
Is he a big guy?
No. Very unassuming. He's a.
He works at an airport, right?
He used to. He just. He worked for American Airlines, so he could throw in baggage, so he could get buddy passes to travel to the arm wrestling competitions. The movie Over the Top is about him.
Okay, so there's another movie, Over the Top.
Over the Top,
yeah,
with Stallone.
It's arm wrestling. You never seen it?
I've not seen it.
So they called Brzezink. He wasn't a big guy. I mean, obviously his forearms and his biceps, shoulders, and everything were crazy, but they called him the Goliath Killer. So he was in it. I don't even know if he was 6 foot tall. He was a heavyweight, or he wasn't a heavyweight, but in arm wrestling, every weight class goes, and then they have an all around. So, and he never lost for 26 years. Nobody could come to the table.
Pulling John.
And it is a great documentary. It got me into arm wrestling, I guess, about 6 years ago.
I watched it like 6-7 times, man.
Really got big into it.
I looked it up on Netflix. It wasn't there, so
I think
I'll
they took
to
it off.
More.
I think they took it off,
searching.
But you can find it on YouTube.
Okay.
It's well worth it just to watch it because it's present day, and actually he's a Russian, up-and-coming Russian. The documentary follows three people. It follows John. It follows another guy from West Virginia,
Jeremy?
Named Travis Bajant.
Travis, yeah.
And then a Russian man that's and arm wrestling's big in Russia, right? Travis Bajant is the up and coming new hotness, but he's got a mouth. I mean, he talks more shit than Muhammad Ali, and he's a lefty. To date, right now, he's still undefeated left handed. He's the number one guy, but so. The documentary, I won't spoil it for anybody, but you have to watch it. And it really documents John's journey through these 26 years and how everybody respects. He's a very humble guy. Does not talk smack when he gets up to the table. But, I mean, just hammer some bitches, dude.
I mean, the Russian guy, dude, there's three dudes. Got a rope tied around his...
Three dudes with their legs on the table.
On a table.
Trying
and a
to
rope,
pull him over.
And a rope trying to pull him down, dude. And they can't pull him. And it's good, man. It's entertaining as shit.
Present day, you know, to get into it, arm wrestling is really kind of coming, not really mainstream, but I follow it quite a bit. And there's another guy named Devin LaRotte. He's a Canadian cat. And, buddy, just the horsepower these guys got in their arms.
Every now and again, you'll be thumbing through the channels and find some arm wrestling on, you know, ESPN8, the Ocho or something like that. I don't know what it shows up on, but it's something, man. The cast of characters, because John is he's quiet. And Travis, like I said, he's Muhammad Ali. He's got a mouth on him, man. But it plays into the whole whole deal, and it's well made.
Everybody, I mean, guys are your size. They're from all walks of life, but it doesn't matter when they get to the table. I mean, because like Devin is like 6'6". He's got really long arms, and then but he'll come up against another guy whose arms half as long. And it is all technique. And to watch these guys.
The forearms like a sack of pecans, dude, man. They just get in there and just jerk that. Dude, it's, I mean, the back and forth.
Dude, the best one-liner, I'll say this one. So Travis Bajan, the left-handed champion, they're in the finals. This is a few years back. They're in the finals, and when they pull their hands apart, they have to strap up. The second they come off, they strap, okay? So they can't come apart anymore. And He's wrestling this other fuck. I think it was Dave Chappie was the guy's name. Anyway, they came apart and they kept back to the table. And Travis put his arm down. They start strapping him up. Best line ever. Travis looks across the table at this dude. And he's like, "Wait till you feel this shit, dude." And I mean, fucking through the table. I was the coolest. I didn't expect it. I was kind of sitting on the couch watching it. And as they were strapping him up, Travis kind of goes across, looks at him.
Yeah, I remember.
Because he's a great big old dude. And he's like, "Where do you feel this shit?
Yeah, country boy.
Yeah, he's country from West Virginia.
Yeah, he's got him on rusty ass hands, dude. You don't even see a wrist. Right? It's just kind of a wrist and an elbow.
It's all palm.
And he knows he's the best, too. So he really talks that game.
Oh, man. That takes me right into today's Patreon question of the day, which comes from Todd. And this question is for Morgan. Morgan, since your back got jacked up, mentioned in the book Service, what activity would you be doing these days you wisely don't consider?
Running 100-mile races.
Yeah. What about dirt biking and all the other stuff you do?
Yeah, race dirt bikes. I do ultra marathons, downhill mountain biking. Yeah, I didn't slow down. At all, and I never will. I'm not gonna let the old man in. It's better to wear out than rust out, Todd. That's my philosophy on life.
Yeah, when you go on to the other side, man, don't come. What did you say, man? Don't roll in there with a brand new car.
Shit, man, been a worn but old and busted.
Yeah, like you stole it.
Worn down on the hub. Yeah, it's always better to wear out than rust out, my friend. That's my philosophy on life. Broke, bad, busted back, legs. It didn't matter. David Goggins said it best. It was like, somebody asked him, he's like, "If your leg's broke, doesn't it hurt to keep running? Wouldn't you stop?" And he's like, "Why should pain stop you?"
Oh, Goggins.
Goggins. All pain Goggins. Does is a reminder that there's something, you know, missing. There's something wrong. That's it. It's kind of like...
It's an indicator light.
What is it? An indicator light. That's what that is.
It's just a check engine light. You can go another 1,000 miles.
Oh, yeah. Mine's on right now.
Same with blood. Like, blood's kind of a check indicator, too. Now, if it's spewing out of the hood... You might
want to
take a look.
Pull over. Talking about like radiator fluid coming out. I'm just like,
thanks for the question, Todd. If you want your question to be asked, join us on Patreon, patreon.com/teamneverquit. Let's get into a listener story. This week's listener story is going to be an awesome one. I'll let Morgan jump into that.
The title's Death Leads to More, Not Less. March 19th, 2018, my best friend and hero died after just a brief 12-day battle with cancer. My dad was one of the greatest influences in my life. I served in the Navy as he did, and I even worked at the same company that he did. I could have given up in that moment that he left the earth. Lord knows the things I said to myself were not pretty. Deep inside, though, I knew he always wanted more. I then had to accept my personal accountability that I had floated for most of my life. I always tried hard enough to not to get bitched at, but not hard enough to truly be great. My time in the Navy, one might say, was my biggest accomplishment yet. But I know that I truly just served always thinking about getting out. I did enough at work to keep my job and hopefully not get written up, but my mouth always found a way to get me in trouble. Legal trouble in 2012 due to alcohol. Needless to say, I needed a wake-up call. I wish I could say it didn't take losing my dad to wake me up, but it truly did. In the last year, I received 3 awards for superior performance at work. I may also be in line for a promotion. As for physical, I told myself I would never be a runner, and yet this past weekend I completed a half marathon. I also got engaged. The biggest thing I've learned is you have to want more for yourself in order to get the true greatness in life. When it's all said and done, I'm proud and I can say I never quit. God bless and stay great. Thank you for sharing that story with us, Matt. I'm sorry for the loss of your father, but as you said, in the long run, engaged, a marathon, and you're doing well at work. I appreciate you sharing your never quit story with us.
Yeah, brother, thanks for writing in, man. Even when as our dads are around, you can't really step into the dad role until your father passes away, because if something goes wrong, you can always go to them. But that's why you catch yourself saying the things that they used to say when they were around, and the reason you're saying them is because they're not around anymore. So take all the good things that you learned from your dad and keep charging forward, brother.
Do you love the TNQ podcast? Make sure you subscribe to get notified about our latest episode each week. The show is available on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, and pretty much any other podcast player. We've got a ton of great episodes and had some incredible guests over the years, including Peter Berg, LaDamian Washington, J.J. Watt, David Goggins, just to name a few.
Do you want exclusive access to the show and bonus behind-the-scenes content? Then you're going to want to join us on Patreon. Joshua, Angel, Johnny, Bobby, Nicholas, Cindy, all these folks have joined us on our Patreon page. They're a part of our team. We'd love for you to be a part of the team. These guys are helping us put this show out every single week, share these stories, give you guys bonus content. We couldn't do it without you guys. So thanks for the support. Thanks for the love. If you want to join the team, head over to patreon.com/teamneverquit.
My name's Morgan. How you doing? I'm Marcus's older brother. I'm the best kept secret in the family.
That's right. In the family, they would say I was kind of what was left. I'm Marcus, and to everybody out there on the team, this is Victoria Allen, and her story, from what we hear, is just unbelievable.
How do we say? So is it Arlen? Do we say your name Arlen? Is that how you pronounce your last name? So we say it right?
It's Arlen. Yeah.
And then we got Andrew hiding behind the back, make sure all this goes down right.
Hey, hey.
So as I was saying, Victoria, I've been inside the YouTube channels watching everything, pulling everything up, and I'm a science guy actually, and I'm a big brain guy, and your story, is one of the happiest stories I've ever experienced, but it's gut wrenching, it's heart wrenching, it's sad, it's excited, and we don't have enough time in this short 45 minutes to chat everything up that I would want to talk to you about. So we'll try to hit the high points and get into the weeds. But do me one favor for the rest of your life. Don't ever stop smiling, because your smile is infectious. It has got to be the prettiest smile I've ever seen.
Oh, my gosh.
And so every time, when I'm watching ESPN, the highlights on ESPN, and then your videos of Dancing the Stars, and when you were on Megyn Kelly and so on and so forth, man, every time you crack a smile, it seemed to levitate the room. And I wanted to personally tell you that.
Oh, thank you. That means a lot. I appreciate that. It's sometimes it takes a lot to smile. I think we all know life can get a little challenging.
Oh, it absolutely can. And that's the reason most people come here, to kind of get in those challenging situations, and they're looking for some ways to kind of get out of it. Or if they're not in a challenging situation, they're trying to get some knowledge to further the understanding of the hardships of life and how they can just prevent it. And when it comes to your story, mm-hmm. and what you've been through in your capacity, I mean, it's unbelievable, like my brother said. So if you wouldn't mind explaining some of that and kind of giving a background on yourself, and then please get into never quit
story. There's some specific questions I cannot wait to ask you. I'm so excited.
Yeah. So when I was 11, I developed two incredibly rare neurological conditions, and basically went from this completely healthy, normal kid to a complete vegetable in a matter of 3 months. You know, I lost the ability to walk, talk, move, function, cognitive, everything just started to shut down. But the doctors didn't really know what was going on. So in the beginning, they told my parents I was doing it for attention, and which still baffles all of us. I'm one of triplets. So I come from a family that doesn't step down from a challenge. And so my parents really dove in and were like, well, we're not giving up on our child. And unfortunately, it wasn't until it was too late that doctors figured out what had happened and figured out they had made the mistake, because what most people don't realize is that there was this very small window in which the doctors, when they were calling me crazy, could have completely treated and reversed what was happening to my body.
With a single injection, from what I understand, right?
The rarity. Yeah, steroids, a round of steroids. This all could have been avoided. And so, but we didn't find that out till later on. But at this point, I was basically what was considered a lost cause. And my parents were told that I would either die, and if I didn't die, I'd be a vegetable the rest of my life, and they should put me away in a home and move on with some sense of normalcy in their lives. And, you know, my parents refused to accept that. My whole family refused to accept that. And what most didn't know is I was completely aware. So I'm hearing all this going on around me and being like, wait a second, no, this is not how my story ends. And really had to kind of lean into my faith and lean into kind of that this, you know, you write your own story, and how do you see your story ending? And so, that really kind of was the next four years for me.
So let me ask you this, Victoria, when you were, and I want, the reason I'm asking this, because I want everybody to hear this and know in case they see this happening, when you were slipping into this vegetative state, but you say you were cognitively aware, which I understand what that means, but was that the case the entire time, or did you fade to black and come back into kind of reality?
Yeah, so I faded into, it was about August of 2006. I had this like crushed, the worst headache. It was literally as if a car was running over my head, and then everything went dark. And so for about a year and a half, I kind of drifted in nowhere land, and then came to not realizing that I was locked in. So I'm trying to have a conversation, trying to figure out where I am, trying to figure out what's going on. And no one can hear me, and no one's responding. And so that's when I realized that something was really, really wrong, and that I was locked in.
So when you were locked in, were you aware? Yeah,
could you see? I mean, did you sleep? Was it like a normal? How was your day locked in, in like that?
So I mean, you have sleep cycles. Like so the difference between a coma and locked in, 'cause a lot of people get it mixed up. A coma is like you're unconscious, but locked in, you're conscious but unaware to move, unable to move or do anything. So you're basically a prisoner inside your own body. And so I had sleep cycles. I could see and hear, but I had no control of where my eyes were looking, or I had no control. I literally, all I could do was think. And so,
basically, you could say anything you wanted to in your mind about whoever's standing around you, and they had no idea.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Yeah. Right? Yeah. And so I was basically a prisoner. Yeah.
So I lay in bed for about 4 hours at night, and I start to hurt all over. Were you experiencing, and reading the book and understanding, and I know that's what really got to me. Did they have you on some sort of pain regimen, or were you just suffering through that? Because I can only imagine laying down for 4 years. Could you imagine that?
Yeah, I was in so much pain. I was having seizures 20 hours a day. I was having migraines constantly. But like, there's nothing worse than not being able to cry and not being able to say that you're in pain and not being able to speak up for it. So they had no idea. I mean, I think they tried to, and my parents were very much aware of trying to make me as comfortable as possible. But when you can't verbalize what you're feeling, no one can read your mind. And so I was in unbearable pain. And there's nothing worse than being in pain and not being able to cry and scream and be like, help me. So that's when I really learned how to kind of meditate, in a sense.
Just
and how
say
to
meditate.
Like, shift my brain and like go somewhere else. Like I always would go to a specific spot on the, so I grew up on this beautiful lake, and that's always my happy place. I mean, that's where I've kind of run away this month, because the last 8 months have been insane. So I ran away this month to the lake, and there's a specific view that, also that might start sounding funny because it's starting to rain. There's a specific view that, that I went to. And so when I was really sick, I would just go to that view and just try to imagine that and meditate on that.
So let me ask you this. When we're locked in and you do the meditation, but we're here for 4 years, do we sing songs in our head? Do we do math problems? I want to know how, for anybody on the outside that would be looking in, how did you live your life? Because obviously it was all internal, but you had to do something.
I think I tried to practice a lot of gratitude. And then I would do math problems. I would pay attention. There were so many machines that were, going off. So I'd find patterns and sounds. I really tried. My biggest fear was losing my mind, like literally, like losing my brain power. So I would spend a lot of that time. I would spend a lot of that time trying to work my brain and trying to get my brain to like keep functioning, and also give myself a bit of, you know, a reality check and be like, all right, my name is Victoria. This is math. This is this. So I had to do stuff to just try and keep my brain going.
Right. And I know your family was there always.
I guess this doesn't even compare to what you had to go through. I mean, in that kind of
4 years
or something. Wow. Yeah. Well, and what we did for a living, we spent a lot of time underwater, and me and a buddy of mine, I mean, hours, 8-10 hours underwater at a time in pitch black water. And it's truly, it's kind of locked into that space. So you can't see anything, can't hear anything. And I remember in the beginning, you know, you just kind of trying to figure out what everything is. Right. And then you start like, all right, what have I always, what can I do in my head to learn? I was like, well, let me learn my alphabet backwards. Right. And then kind of start with stuff that you wouldn't even think of. And then you're like, all right, let me see if I can remember the oldest person I've ever met. Right. My oldest friend, and go put them in order from there to then. Right. I mean, and then that's the best part about having a wonderful life and the people around you to share that with, is because it's your thoughts really that occupy your life. And when you're not, other than that, you're making them. You're making your memories. You're going out. That's what your body's for. It goes out and stimulates the brain and locks everything in. So if that's taken away from you and all you have is your mind, then that's the great part about having a family and everything like that.
Yeah.
I can't believe you had to go through that. That's crazy.
Yeah, I'm sure that there was a couple of times when you had some like really dark moments and dark thoughts. Like, what was it that you did? I mean, you talk a lot about like the things that you did to keep your mind sharp. But what did you do to come out of those darker moments in those 4 years?
I found my faith. I really found my faith and found that, you know, I mean, no one else could hear me. So I just started praying to God and realized that, you know, my story doesn't end in defeat. And I had to keep telling myself that. And I also would dream and picture what my life would look like if I got out of this hospital bed, you know, and I pictured doing crazy things like winning a gold medal or dancing on Dancing with the Stars or being in front of a camera and all these different things and using my voice to make a difference. And so I really honestly kind of tried to lean into my faith, but also lean into the fact that, you know, I'm not in control of this. And the only one that is God. And it would literally have to be a miracle to get me out of this. And so believing in that miracle, but also believing in the beauty of every day and believing that every day I woke up, I was defying the odds because tomorrow was definitely not guaranteed. I mean, it's not guaranteed for any of us, but tomorrow for sure for me was not guaranteed. And so every day I woke up, I kind of was like, all right, I'm alive. Like how am I one day closer to that victory and to that blink of hope, if you will, or that moment of breaking through. And so I kind of held on to all that because I really didn't have another choice, because I realized things could get really dark really quickly. And I didn't want to go down that path, because I knew once I started going down that path, there was no turning back. And so I did everything in my power to fight that urge to slip down that slippery slope.
So that was going to be my next question, is what was it that you were doing internally that was breaking down that wall? And obviously faith goes into it, and admirations of being an Olympic swimmer and being on camera. And do you think the power behind that, because it, from what I understand, it was one day. And if you could tell us, did the doctors give you something, a shot or something that triggered you and allowed you to start coming out of that? And you made eye contact with your mom for the first time. And then that's when she knew that you knew, like, hey, I'm in here and I'm working my way through this problem.
So it was, I was having these really bad seizures. And so I wasn't, I was having trouble, sleeping. I wasn't sleeping. And so the doctor's like, we need to knock her out. She needs to sleep. Like, this is really bad. And so they gave me a sleeping medication, and some way, by the grace of God, the sleeping medication, stop the neurotransmitter that was sending me seizure signals. And so for the first time in well over a year, I wasn't seizing every minute. And so for that moment, I kind of had this like, okay, what do I have? Like, what can I do? What can I do? Like, I was like, I have this moment, like I have this free time. And because I mean, after 4 years, I think anyone would start to worry that, you know, that people are going to give up or that, which my family never, I mean, they planned on taking care of me the rest of their lives. And so, but I just was like, I need a sign. And so I realized I had my eyes. And so I started, first off, I just really enjoyed the fact that I could look left, right, up, down, and even cross them if I wanted to. Like, I was excited that I had something to move, you know? And then it was being able to make eye contact with my mom. And she saw me, I saw her, and then she walked a little closer. And she was like, if you can hear me, can you blink twice? And I did. And that was like that turning point where they realized she's in there, she's in
Damn.
There, she's been in there.
So, that's amazing.
If nothing, like I've done a lot of cool things in my life, but the biggest accomplishment I've ever done was being able to blink and just being able to be like, I'm still here.
And then that was in 2010, correct?
Yep.
And then
just the end.
Two years later, you're swimming.
Yep.
You're breaking a world record.
What? Yes.
No big deal.
So you got to think about it like this. We all go through, gold is forged in fire. The hotter the fire, the purer the gold, right? So when you're born,
yeah.
Like our kids are the next version of us. Just all the doors are shut. So you're looking at the next version of yourself and you're trying to follow yourself through life to see which way you go, but you're also the combination of your mother and your father. But we go through all of that. And in the first 40 years, it's kind of like you're just developing an opinion. And then after that, perspective and then wisdom hopefully drops in. But the older we get, we with the noise and everything that's around us, we can't really concentrate on the voice that's really talking to us and screaming at us. What you were talking about is God, right? Because when you get locked into a certain situation like that, it's almost one of those deals like, hey, I've been trying to scream at you so long, you weren't paying attention, I had to do this to you.
And, yeah, you have no choice.
Right, I got you now. I like to call that detention, right? Like you just got strapped into detention, so all you can do is just focus on what you're supposed to. And what you're doing now is called dream walking. That's what I do. Our life is a dream walk, because when you get into those situations when they take your physical body away from you and you have nothing but your mind, then you start – our whole lives we think about the days that – that we're in and the days ahead, we kind of play it out in our head, and the better you get at something, the more you do that. That's what makes people professionals and champions, because even when they're not doing their something, it's in their head and they're playing it out. And that's mind memory and muscle memory and how all that plays in. So the fact that, I mean, you spent those, once you figured out the plan and what was really happening and that you're not really in control of this, man, you just kind of running, you're working for somebody else now that, all right, well, all I have to do ultimately is sit here and plan out the rest of my life and how I want to do it and how much fun I want to have until they take it away from me again. And when you're doing that, everything that you thought of is played out, because you've already played it out. There's no other way. If it's already in your head, right, and then you've thought about it so much and you've conditioned yourself, the body will naturally react and follow it. The problem most people have when they're switching kind of routines, I like to say 2 weeks. If I want something, I usually wait 2 weeks. If I still want it, then I'll put money away to go buy it. And same way with working out or doing anything to develop a habit or to get rid of one. The mind and body, once it gets locked into something, it creates a routine. That's why the body kind of shapes itself around that routine. And then all of a sudden you're like, hey, I want to work out. So when the mind is ultimately convinced it wants to do that, it starts going to the gym and it starts working out. Well, the body hadn't been there yet. And it starts to get sore and complain and you know, it's like, hey, I don't want to do this. Let's get back to the old. It'll do everything it can through those 2 weeks to bring it back to that old routine. But the minute you pass that point and ultimately once somebody recognizes it, they're like, hey, man, I understand what's going on with you. All right. And it's a slow process, but it's fast. Right. And once your mind is conditioned to understand that, hey, there is no going back, this is what I got to do, this is how it's going to play out, then you just start doing that. You dream walk, man. Everything that you do, you make up for those times that you were locked down, kind of.
Yeah, for sure.
And that's what's so important about having the family around. I mean, because they know who you are and what you've been through and what you're capable of. And if you can go through that, because that's where the anguish comes from. It's internal. right? I mean, we kind of beat ourselves up on the inside and everything. So you have plenty of time to just sit and think about all that and play it out in your head and understand that, hey, wait a minute, you know, good, bad, or indifferent. There's nothing new under the sun. Just the people are new. And they're just trying to just get used to whatever's going on. That's why chaos, a lot of people are in chaos. They don't know what to do in it. But you can't really control it. But what you can do is get into it and understand how it works and how it moves. And you can, the body, like I said, and the mind are an awesome mechanism. It teaches itself how to survive in any condition. Point in fact, you went through.
Well, and it's like, and it's a whole thing, and it's perspective, and it's taking, I think it's easy, especially when you go through trauma or when you go through something, it's easy to want to go. And I feel like it's those quiet moments that you have to utilize. But I think a lot of us naturally, especially if you've been through something, have like a hero complex where you feel like you have to do it on your own. You have to do this, you have to do that. And this whole last year, I've learned about the power of leaning into others and reaching out and taking that quiet time, or recognize when God's like, hey, I'm putting you in time out for a hot second, and kind of resetting and recharging, and how, you know, we our bodies click in, you know, physically when we have to fight or when we have to get through something. But then that whole brain game is a whole different battle that you have to keep working at. That's a muscle that has to keep evolving and building and not getting stuck in certain habits. And being locked in for 4 years, I feel like sometimes my brain still thinks it's locked in. And so I get caught up in my head, and, you know, sleep deprivation and stress and an overbooked schedule tend to like amplify all of that. And then it's like you fall flat on your butt and you have to be like, all right, reset. Like, let's figure this out. And then let's work through that and work out and then reach out on that too. But it's so fascinating how the brain and body work and how you have to keep kind of both in check, but it's a lot easier to keep your body in check versus your brain. Your brain is a bit of like a wild card, and it's like, whoa, 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 like change the channel, or let's sit down and shut the TV off for a hot second and evaluate that.
In the beginning, I mean, your body was at that age was growing faster than your mind was, right? Everything was kind of maturing faster in the body, and your mind is still doing the kid thing. And then when you went into that, you came out ahead of it. So there's a lot of situations I imagine you get into that your mind is prepped for it. And like, hey, I know we can do this. I already got it here locked in the head. Just the body's like, wait a minute, I hadn't done this yet.
Mayday.
Yeah, right. Like, so that's when you hit that wall.
Yeah, for sure. But then I think sometimes you're at that point where you're like, am I going to let this wall knock me down, or am I going to break through it? And there's been times where I've been knocked down, but then there's been other times where I break through it, and it's being okay with either outcome. Like if you do get knocked down, like take a breath and okay, that wall wasn't meant to be broken through. There's another way to go about this. And then other times you kind of feel that fear and feel that, you know, that breaking point, and you just break through. And so it's like finding that balance, but also being kind to yourself too, that like, hey, I need a little help breaking down this wall, and not being afraid to reach out and ask for that.
Oh, well, that's one of the coolest parts of where you're at right now, because, you know, that's the Lord's way of saying, hey, you're not paying attention. I'm going to stop you right there. And exactly. It's not a wall or anything. It's like a pit stop. Like, all right, I guess I got to go in here for a second and evaluate, or let something catch up.
You in time out.
Yeah, it's time. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Time out, detention. He's like, all right, fine. And ultimately, you know when that's happening, because everything is going smooth. Your mind, you're headed, you're locked. I'd say locked in. Now that term is actually, it's not a bad term, being locked, because that's what we say when we're in the teams and we're fixing to go in and train, or we're going on a mission. We say, hey, lock in, right? So I mean, which means get your mind.
I mean, that's why I titled my book. It's a multifaceted title.
It's brilliant. It really is, because and that's what most people search for, that ability to clear their mind and lock in to that moment, and to get your mind and your body on that same level. And it truly is a gift. And like I said, once you have that ability, the way you know you're going too fast is when you hit the pit stop or the timeout.
Yeah. And when everything kind of goes on pause, or your path that you thought you were going on gets a little derailed, or people, you know, it's like God clears space and is like, whoa, 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 whoa. Like you need to like, let's take off your little sunglasses and see things and evaluate things and how you're doing. And it's always, I feel like those breakdown moments where you feel like you've broken down is usually the moments where you have to take a breath, you have to evaluate, because a breakthrough is coming.
Right.
And that there's been so many times where I've been like derailed off the street and I'm, you know, broken down, not literally, but like broken down. And then what has come from that is a breakthrough. And so I think it's understanding that just because you're broken down doesn't mean that you're, it's a pit stop. You're stopping because God is trying to put you on the path of where you're supposed to go, but wean out the traffic and wean out the unnecessary things or the things or people or places that are going to stunt that or get in the way of that, because your journey and your destiny is too precious to let anything get derailed. And when you go, you know, you have to kind of trust that. But so many of us fight that, like fight those closed doors, fight those, you know, put a question mark where there should be a period. And it's like, no, you just have to let go, surrender, and trust your journey, because that breakthrough is coming. But if you spend too much time like fighting the breakdown, then you'll never have your breakthrough.
Yep. That's what I always say. Let go. You mean you just, and that ego gets in the way. That's that voice kind of that pulls the car to the left or the right a little bit. And I always look at it like, we never get out of school. So on Monday, imagine, yeah, after the summertime, we're all in the same school. We're just in different grades. And what happens is on Monday, you go in and you're kind of like, man, you're learning new information. She's like, I didn't have any idea. That's why Mondays are kind of bummers. Like, I don't know if I wasn't paying attention. I shouldn't get it. And then Tuesday is kind of, you hear it again. Wednesday, usually a pop quiz and you're getting your battle rhythm, your flow. Yeah. Thursday, you know, test day, or Friday's a test day. And then Saturday you got off, right? And Sunday you're kind of relaxing again, and then you go back in it. And it's just every day. It's literally when you came out of that, starting over. But you got all the knowledge that you have, but your body just started over in kindergarten. And then you kind of, that's my brother and I say, from zero to 40 is just kind of training, right? You don't know what you are or who you are at all. It's just, when I say gold is forged in fire, it's because of the first 40 years are supposed to be in that dark spot, man, just kind of testing you and molding you into what you're supposed to be. And then you take all that knowledge at 40 and you start over and you go in a completely different direction, like you're in kindergarten. But your body has to catch up with your mind, and then it's just going, starting over with just the basic stuff. It's just like, you're like, hey, I'm in colors and numbers and just anything, just listen, right? Just pay attention, just open your ears and just listen and watch, and you get a whole new taste of what's going on around you when you're dreamwalking like you are.
Yeah, speaking of that, Victoria, what was that transition like from really having to depend on yourself for those 4 years, dealing with your mind and overcoming that, and then transitioning to this journey where you have to relearn everything and you have to start to rely on more of the people around you? What was that transition like?
It's all been not easy, but I think for me, it was the hardest part, which I think whenever I've said this before has always made people go, wait, what? I think, you know, it was survival, then it was catch up and recover, then it was make up for lost time, and then it was all these different things. And so I think when I came back, I was just so ready to get back and so ready to just kind of dive into it, and having the family I had have and the resources I have, just, we all just kind of hit the ground running. So a lot of that recovery process was almost numbing the pain that I went through in those 4 years, or not allowing me to really have to think about it, because I had to catch up. I had to do this. I had to go back to school. And then as time went on, and it really wasn't until I kind of started diving into a more successful season and being kind of where I'd reached like, wow, I think I'm at like, I've really kind of climbed this mountain, and now I'm like, wow, I've not only caught up, but I kind of overshot too. And you know, God didn't give me double for my trouble. He gave me, you know, quadruple, whatever. It was just like, it went 0 to 100. And so I almost found that was harder, because when I got to kind of that top of the mountain where I realized, wow, like this is all happening and I did it, you know, that's when the real battle started, because that's when I started to have to feel and have to evaluate. And I think when I was writing my book was really one of the darker times for me, because when you're going through it physically, you're just going through it. And when you're in this recovery mode, you're just recovering because you know where you're trying to go and you know what you want to do. And then it wasn't really until I kind of got there and I was doing it all and then doing more of it. But then I was in the public eye and all these different things that I was like, oh man, like, oh boy, mayday, mayday. You know, that's when I started leaning on people. You know, I think I was fiercely trying to be independent, trying to do all these things. And so everyone was like giving me the resources and stuff, but I was like doing it on my own and working on it. And then I think when most people would least expect it was when I started leaning on others. And I think that was harder than when initially, because initially I was like, all right, I got to do this. But I also physically, couldn't hold my head up and different things and couldn't hold a pencil or a fork. And so those are things I just learned, and I was fueling the frustration and all the pain I'd gone through in those 4 years into that recovery that I didn't really stop to think about it. And it really wasn't until about like a year ago or a year and a half ago that I did kind of struggle with leaning back onto other people and leaning and being in the position I'm in and doing all the things that I do now. For anyone who hasn't gone through what I've gone through would be stressful, and who isn't my age would be stressful, But then you throw in all those other things. It's kind of this, it can at times be a bit of a tornado. And so it's learning to kind of reach out. It's learning to embrace the timeouts, but also like my family and the people in my life being like, hey, like we're here and we got you. And it's okay to take your superhero cape off for a little while and have your sidekick or have someone that will help you through. And so I think that was harder than the actual recovery thing. The recovery was more so just, got to get back to life, got to get back to school. I had such kind of a concrete layout that I had planned. And then, but I really, in all honesty, I had to prepare to die for 4 years. So I really technically, I dreamed about living and I was excited about living, but I didn't really prepare to live. So when it came time where I was out of the recovery mode, I was out of the catch-up mode, and I actually could start living, which was about, a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, that's when the challenge started. That's when I was like, oh, I didn't prepare for this, and it wasn't, and by the grace of God, it wasn't just, I wasn't going back into this ordinary life. I got thrown into this extraordinary life, which is a blessing, but with every blessing comes burdens and comes this like double whammy of like, well, why did I live and how do I do this? And then you throw in all the other external factors. It was just kind of this, a bit of a tornado that like when the I kind of have a term with kind of my circle that I'm like, sometimes it rains, and when it rains, I have to reach out and be like, hey, I need an umbrella, or I need a moment. And so,
4 years they were helping you and you were helping yourself. And then when you come out of that, when you say it's like a tornado, it sure was. There's a tornado, everything in your mind. I mean, it was just swirling around in there. Everything that you had ever, I mean, 'cause that's what life is those memories, right? And how impactful they are in your head. So the strong, when you came out of that and started moving, I mean, you're in the middle of that tornado, just pulling it back in and tucking it inside of you. And that's what kind of drives you now. I mean, you're like a little tornado. There's just everything that's swirling around inside of you is, I mean, when you get on that path and you start pushing, man, that's what kind of what drives you. And it's all right to get to, that's, like I said, those timeouts, that attention, man, you push yourself so hard because hell, I was laying around for a while, and now I want to catch up and show, Lord, I was paying attention. I wouldn't just hearing that stuff. I mean, all right, I'm gonna get out here, and I'm gonna do everything I told you I was, and it lines out just like it is in your head. And then when you get into those moments and those people show up, it's because they're going through them too, right? And you're a part of that. You're you can't look at every those bad situations that you're in now are yours. You got sent in there to handle somebody else's.
Yeah.
And helping them through theirs, because you kind of went through your fire, right? And you came out of it, and that's your blessing. Like, all right, now this is yours. Let's see what you do with it.
Yeah, exactly.
Because if you ask, it's funny because with opinion, there's no bodily harm or anything that goes in with that. With perspective, you see the good and the bad, and you've probably got some scars or some damage. And with wisdom, when you ask for that, you're going to get all you want. But what comes with that is the emotional ride. So you have to understand wisdom. You have to understand all the senses and the emotion, because the heart drives a lot of that as well. And we're all tapped with a sin inside of us. Yeah. Each one has one. You can either harness your sin and help people from it, or you can harness it and hurt people with it. And as you go through all, you're kind of putting all that into perspective, and it kind of creates what you are. And then all those situations that you go into, in order to have the wisdom, you have to have that emotional side of it. I mean, so basically there'd be situations you're not even in, but your friends are going through it, and you're going on that emotional ride with them, because that's how it works. Just like if you ask the Lord for patience, he's not going to just tap you with it. He's going to go put you in some situations to get it. So it's, everything that you ask for, you dream for, because in that quiet spot, there was no, it was just your voice with a straight link up top, right? And now we're getting to play it out.
You've had quite the journey since all this happened to you, though. You know, in terms of winning four gold, you know, four medals, one gold and three silver. What were those experiences like for you after all the hard times you faced, the 4 years, 5 years leading up to that?
It was incredible. I mean, I think it wasn't easy by any means, but it was incredible. But I just feel like everything since then has been, you know, building blocks. You know, just when I thought I had reached the top of this mountain, God gave me another mountain to climb. And so it's been incredible to be able to do that in such a short period of time with such a testimony of how great God is and how you can, you know, your setbacks can be set up for greater comebacks. But the whole thing's been incredible. It's a bit surreal, but it kind of has just led to one thing after the other after the other. So I feel like my mind is continually being blown, I know I'm one of the few that get to experience that. So it's really incredible.
Well, a lot of people correlate life with climbing a mountain. And in order to do that, you got to do one hand over the other, one foot over the other. If you skip a couple of steps, you got a lot further to fall. But also, if anybody who's ever climbed a mountain understands the plateaus, and in life you have plateaus, which are not a bad thing. It's actually a good thing, because when you hit a plateau, that means it's flat ground. You can walk and catch your breath for a little bit, right? You hang out there too long, or if you go back the other direction, you're going to start going down. But when you keep climbing, when you hit your plateau, it's just to kind of hone in and harness everything that you had just accomplished behind you. And then once you got that on level ground, then you go to hit the next peak. And you're right. I mean, it's kind of like once you think you get to the top, man, that was just the top of that one to get to the other one. And you don't ever stop climbing. I mean, to come out of that to be, you know, Olympian dancing with the stars, did all of that come out of being locked in, or was that there beforehand and that just locked it in?
I think it was a mixture. I think like I had these impossible dreams, you know, when I was little, but I think being locked in was where I was kind of fueling up to really just go after the impossible. You know, I think before it was just these little impossible dreams or these fun little pipe dreams. And then, you know, you go through what I go through and then come out and you're like, I'm just going to go for it. I've got nothing to lose but everything to gain here.
So if you could tell anybody who's going through something, I mean, is there a phrase you say? Is there a pass down? What's your kind of outlook on what you would pass to somebody in their hard times in life?
I think that the toughest climbs have the prettiest views, and that when you feel like you can't climb anymore, to keep climbing, because the view once you get to the top is going to be worth all that pain and all that toughness and all those moments of questioning and worrying. And so the toughest climbs have the prettiest views, and to stay your path. It's the moment where you feel like giving up, or where you feel like it's not going to happen, or you feel like you'll never get there. It's usually right before your breakthrough. And so to hold on to that and trust that breakdown is just getting you geared up for your breakthrough.
Well, that's brilliant. That's a good one. I hope you don't mind if I steal that. That's something,
please,
man.
No, by all means.
I tell you what, just amazing. You're an amazing human being. Thank you so much for coming on here. I tell you what, before we close this up, can you tell our listeners or tell the team how they can follow you, find you, and what you got coming up, what you got going on?
Yeah, I'm mostly active on Instagram, so they can follow me on Instagram. It's at ArlenV1. And then I have actually a clothing line with a collaboration with Jockey coming out next month. So that's kind of a big,
congratulations.
And I just finished taping. Oh, thank you. And I just finished taping American Ninja Warrior Jr. And then my foundation, the Victoria's Victory Foundation, we're doing a lot of good work. So those are kind of the three big ones going on right now in my life, and just trying to make most of this second chance I've been given.
Well, you're a ninja, all right.
But you guys,
I tell
are
you
awesome,
what,
so
I mean,
you.
There's no doubt about that. Part of ninja training is that mental part. You kind of, that usually comes at the end of it, but you got it out of the beginning. I tell you what, thank you so much. I'm inspired.
Well, you guys inspire me, and I'm so honored to have been on this. So thank you guys so much. I really appreciate it.
You bet. Take care of yourself and have a great rest of your day.
Thank you. You as well.
That was probably one of the most amazing conversations, a most amazing individual that I've had the opportunity to speak with, because if you just lay her story out at the age of 11, comatose state, 2000, comes out 4 years later, 2010. The only thing she could do is blink her eyes. 2012, she wins a gold medal, breaks a world record in the Paralympics. And then 8 years later, she's up at Dancing with the Stars and still can't feel her legs. I mean, there was 1,001 questions I wanted to ask her, because I think her story and what happened to her, because she had not only the cognitive disability, but the physical disabilities as well. And then here she is, not back to baseline, but close enough that she can have a functional life. What did she, you know, we didn't get to get into it, but what did they give you? What did you do? What rehab modalities did you use to get you? I saw her do a box jump. I swear the box is 4.5 feet.
She was incredible. I mean, people talk about getting in their heads and like having mental blocks. Imagine being in your head for 4 years.
I don't know if you guys read her book or not, but you know, her first words, y'all know what that was?
Nope.
They hurt me. Because she was inside, locked in, and all the doctors and nurses, and she was in that home, hurt her.
Golly, man.
And she's sitting there just taking it. Can't tell nobody. And to come out of that nightmare and then all the adversity and obstacles that she had to overcome to get to where ESPN commentator. She's got her own foundation. Dancing with the Stars, you know.
And she's young still.
She's 25, I think, is what it was. She thinks she's 25 now.
That, yeah.
She was born the year we graduated. High school. Born in 94. She should run for president.
Yeah. She was awesome.
Her smile. I don't know if you've seen it. You guys, I mean, if any of our listeners have not seen a video of her on Dancing with the Stars or just anything, I mean, her smile is infectious. It's got to be, it's amazing. But we'll try to get all that information and share that with listeners on.
Yeah, we're going to try to get some more stuff from her, because her interview was just, you know, you can only put so much in 30, 45 minutes.
Right.
And so we've got a list of questions that we hope to send her, and maybe we'll release that on Patreon or on our website, but just be on the lookout for that extra content that we should be releasing.
There's people out there that know someone or have someone in their lives that are struggling with some sort of disability, and there are answers out there that maybe you just don't know about because it's not off public consumption or just you don't have access to it.
If this was your first time listening to this show, we are putting out this type of content every single week. People with stories that shock us every week. I feel like every time we talk to someone, it's like, Who has the greatest never quit story? I don't know. Like, the people that we have on are so incredible. So if you want to be the first one to know when we drop new episodes, you've got to make sure you've subscribed to the show. On Apple Podcasts, you can press the purple button. It says subscribe. Pretty much any other major podcast player has a subscribe button. Click on it. You'll get notified when we drop episodes. And yeah, you're going to want to stay in touch with what we've got coming up.
Did today's episode ignite a new fire in you? If there's one thing that I've learned, it's sharing your story is a powerful thing. There are people out there that need a kick in the ass, and your story could be the one thing to change their life forever. Take a minute to share your story at teamneverquit.com/podcast. Just click on the Share Your Story button in the menu so we can encourage you along the way. Your story just might be read on one of our upcoming episodes.